We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I have found my Phaeton. I have found my Phaeton equivalent.
Wait. Oh, I see. Sorry. I thought you were saying you wanted a Phaeton.
No, I don't want a Phaeton.
Okay, now I get it.
I have found my Phaeton equivalent.
Okay.
So think of everything a Phaeton is.
Yes.
Scary, expensive to own, yet still kind of interesting and vaguely cool.
And
think
has
of this.
Precipitously dropped to a point where you just got to go, couldn't I just buy one for the fun of it? Which
exactly.
is what I think about all of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. This checks all the boxes.
Okay, I'm ready.
It is the 2003 to 2007
okay.
Jaguar XJR. Remember the XJ8, the big sedan?
So yeah.
This is the XJR.
Okay.
I've been shopping a lot.
No.
One of the most expensive ones I've found is like 14 grand. But if you keep scrolling into the high mile cars, you get down to $8,000, and then I found one for $5,300.
Wow.
An 05 XJR, 147,000 miles, British Racing Green, $5,350.
You know,
yikes.
You know what? I hate to say this.
You
know what needs to happen here? And I don't really think this is a financially good idea, but I think in every other area, it's a great idea.
Phaeton versus XJR.
I need to get a Phaeton and you need to get an XJR. We need to see which is the bigger money pit. Which breaks first. The problem is we got to spend 10 grand for the last.
Yeah.
But just to figure out which one has the most stuff that doesn't work and which one breaks to the point that it becomes a planter in the driveway first.
Here's an 03.
Look.
$4,400 bucks under the $5,000 mark.
The
Yikes.
Person that likes to create content in me couldn't want to do this more. The person that's worried about the fact that the show would spend 10 grand to basically create
burn.
Pieces that don't roll anymore.
Yeah.
That frightens me quite a bit. But yeah, okay.
Maybe we could build a museum afterwards and we could charge ticket admissions and
that's
make our money
happen.
Back
that's
to come
gonna,
see the cars that
nobody
broke.
Wants to see those.
No,
nobody wants to see those. Unless they're rolling on camera or it's us scratching our heads because they no longer run.
The Phaeton needs suspension. Please give.
Yeah, please give lots. Yeah. I actually had a discussion with a friend actually just tonight who is bemoaning the fact that he's pretty sure his long-running truck has died.
Okay.
And it's worth all about right. $3,000, and the transmission that it needs is worth $6,000.
Eek. That's
and
no good.
And I said, how much would the dealer give you for it? For a scrap, because that's the answer.
Ooh.
Because he's got like 260,000 miles. It's not like... It's time for this
pickup truck.
It's time for this pickup truck to go.
Okay, that's up there.
So
it's up there,
you know,
but you know.
I said it's time to let that go.
Could he make a YouTube video of him launching it off a cliff, and then the revenue from YouTube would actually be more than the car's value to make?
The car's value is so low that pretty much any YouTube video would make it more than the value. So the problem is he just needs to unload it and move on.
Yeah.
But anyway, but this is hard. When you have these discussions about, okay, I have this car, it's paid off and it needs blank. That's these are all the financial equations you've got to take. And then you have crazy ideas like we do when, you know, car manufacturers are throwing press cars at us. And so we go, we should buy a $5,000 car that has a lot of technology that will probably break. So I'm thrilled you have yours. I really do like this because I think it would be...
This is very
interesting and fun.
Here's a straight up $5,000 07 XJR. Did you know they were that cheap?
No.
This is amazing.
You're right. That is your Phaeton. That is perfect.
Isn't this perfect?
It really is.
One of my go-to websites is Park Place LTD. They are a really, really high-end dealership up
Their
in Bellevue
gorgeous.
In Washington.
Yes.
And so I was naturally cruising around the site today.
Of course you were, yeah.
And I came across a Vandenplas.
Uh-huh.
Let's see here. What was it?
Oh,
it was
no.
A topaz color, like metallic champagne?
No. Metallic nasty.
Like super
nasty. Check the box for metallic nasty.
The interior's on
it.
Here it is. 99 Jaguar XJ Vandenplas for $11,000. It's got 48,000 miles.
Is that the cheapest car ever on their website? Because I've never seen anything below like 40 on that website.
Yeah, $11,950. You know, if I offered him $10,500, I'd have a Vandenplas in
they couldn't wait to get rid of it.
Monumental, amazing champagne.
That's a car that they can't get rid of fast enough.
No, the interior's perfect. It's perfect.
You got me looking at Phaetons while we're here. I'm on Auto Tempest literally right now looking at
Phaetons. Please donate to my suspension.
I'm looking at them right now.
Fund.
Yeah. See, here's a difference. The 04 Phaeton V8 is $5,900 with 150,000 miles, and the 06 when they actually like work,
right, the upgrade,
that one is $17,000 with 90,000 miles.
Okay, I mean, so, I did find a $19,000 XJR. I mean, if you want to spend money, only 33,000
miles. I don't really
want
to spend money.
If you really want to throw down, this is an 05. But yeah.
This is terrible. I'm looking at these again. Here I am again, looking at them.
So that's the question. Who's, I mean, they're right in the same year, too. Because if you got the 06, here's an 06 for 13.9 for 14 grand. So let's compare the mid-2000s, the British versus the Germans. Let's actually
06,
pit these cars.
They're kind of... almost turquoise blue. It's actually a very nice color, but the 06, it only has 75,000 miles. It's the V8. It's the right year, 10 grand.
I'd even buy a white XJR for the
no,
right
price. No, you
wouldn't.
Well, I don't want to drive it, but anyway. Oh, but you know what? Here's
power,
the problem.
Though,
I'm looking at this Phaeton, and I can tell you right now that his suspension's gone.
Oh.
Look at that.
That's the front.
Right.
Oh.
That's not right.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that.
And comparatively, if you put it on bags, then you made it worse.
Exactly.
So
he should at least like jack the front up and put a couple of rocks underneath and then take the photo.
At least fake the photo. Come on, folks. That's a rookie mistake.
What are you thinking?
Should we do a podcast about things that actually relate to reality? Because you and I are off in the weeds and having fun that we probably shouldn't even
think
about.
We should. Well, there's a lot of news up front, but we do have a couple of fun debates. Connor is writing to us about the great American road trip car, but the Paul limiter is 13 grand and he wants to spend 10. So
yeah, heard that.
We're going to discuss this as well as Nick C. in Indiana looking for a $10,000 convertible. He and his wife want the weekend getaway car, and he's tall as well. So a couple of tall guys. And they're looking for fun, getaway, road trippy sorts of cars.
Very cool. I like it.
But before we do, we've got a bit of news here to discuss with various models. The wide body is being introduced in all of Dodge's products. Actually, we're across the board. We've got the Fiat 500 wide body, everybody.
It's not big enough in its current form. We should make this wider.
When you don't know what to do next, wide body. Let's squeeze blood from a turnip. Let's just... extend, because you know they don't have to do much tooling change. They can keep building the car, just put a wider axle. Yeah. Like maybe it's just wheel spacers, and you go wider.
It might be just deeper dish wheels. It's possible.
Could be.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So then we're going wide body. Everybody, FCA is going wide body to all their models because that will extend the models a little bit longer, just get a little bit extra out of them before the.
Honestly, would like to know if there's anybody at FCA. That is actually working on an update, a full update of the Challenger, because that car is old.
Now. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. That's early
2000s. They just keep refining it. And if memory serves, it's already working with an old Mercedes chassis.
You can't just keep adding power and keep milking it.
At some point, you've got to go, we should do a new one of this. And because, as we know, it's taken the better part of 5 years to get on that. Is anybody currently working on that? If you work at FCA, we won't give your name.
Ralph,
you don't have
listening?
To tell us.
Ralph,
but if you work at FCA and it is at least in process, could you just send us a little email and be like, yep.
Just a one word subject line. Nothing in the body of the email, just in the subject line. Yep.
That would be nice perfect. To know. I would really like that.
Yeah, so that was introduced. It seems to be the talk of Instagram and, you know, wide body everything. But then there's, you know, some rumors flying around about the Camaro. Is that being phased out? Is it just being delayed? Is it just, we don't know yet. And it's hard to make any decisions or, of course, any speculation. This falls into the category of, should I wait 2 years when the new blank comes out? Should I save my money? We don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
Until
you're absolutely
they make
right.
an announcement, we don't know. At this point, as of this recording, Chevy has still not whipped the sheet off the new Corvette.
It's true.
So we don't know.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
We are finding out more details. It's going to be in California. And, you know, we're just excited. But I don't get the idea it's any driving involved with the Corvette. It's just tear the sheet off. And
you're right.
Maybe something Star Spangled is going to happen at
probably
that point.
There may be fireworks. There'll probably be a picture of an eagle at some point.
The second Iron Man movie, when he starts in the back of the C-130.
Yep.
And
jumps out and lands
jumps out
among all the girls on stage.
And it's AC/DC everything.
It's phenomenal.
That's what I want for the Corvette. come on. You know
you're
this
right.
scene.
That is quite perfect. Yes.
That's what I want.
Could we figure out a way to actually drop the C8 into that room? That'd be amazing. I really do like that.
Like the only one that exists? No. Darn it.
I like this. This is good. Yeah, we are not going to that Corvette reveal. If that's the reveal, I really would wish to be there. But
telling
it's
you,
not going to be the thing.
Let's parachute one out the back of something with fireworks and smoke jumpers.
Essentially, at that point, what you need to do is just hire Michael Bay and call it an afternoon.
That really
is what happened. You know, those big gasoline cans of explosions.
Heck, he does the Transformer movies anyway. I mean,
that's
he's
all
already
he does.
Working with Chevy. He's already, featuring their products.
Right,
he needs
right.
to do the cool Pepsi commercial version of the reveal for the new Corvette. What would that look like?
Well,
and the turnaround from Bad Boys, Will Smith and Martin, there we go. So the turnaround where they start the camera low and twist around.
No, that's on every single Michael Bay film.
That is the signature move.
See Pearl Harbor, see everything. I will break this down. Here's how this works. You put the dolly, which, by the way, when you get a dolly and you get union guys, it's going to take a couple hours to do this. You put a dolly in a circle. You create circular track for your dolly.
Yeah.
You pull out all of the little, if you've never seen this done, they have little wedge spacers to make sure the track is perfectly level.
Right.
You create a circle. You put the dolly on a circle. You put the actor in the middle. You start all the way jibbed down.
In this case, the Corvette, the new car.
Exactly. You start all the way jibbed, except it's not very tall. That's the problem. You start all the way jibbed down. Okay.
Minor.
And you, so the arm's all the way low, and you have to run at least 48 frames a second, which means at least double time for slow-mo.
Okay,
but you might
want
to run like 96 or something nuts. How fast can you get film through the camera? Granted, we're in a post-film world, but still, you get my point.
Got it.
Lots of frames are happening.
Bring it.
Okay? And then you go in a circle. This is the Michael Bay recipe. You go in a circle while the actor, for whatever reason, he's fallen over, he's tied his shoe, he reloaded his gun and it was on the ground. I don't know what the reason was, but he goes from a crouched position to a standing triumphant looking up at, I don't even know what.
Swelling
off
music.
Screen.
Come on.
And you do that slowly. And then that's what, this is the Michael Bay signature. It's been in almost every movie he's done.
It's the cookbook. It's how to bake the Transformers cake or whatever.
I still
how to make that movie.
That when he leaves his driveway, it's just a bunch of those gasoline explosions.
Just
boom, boom,
squibs
boom, boom,
all the way
boom,
down.
Down the drive with like a big firework thing and he leaves the drive. I really think that's just Monday. You know, I think that's
going
it.
To work.
I don't know
boom.
How we got this far off track, but we're off into Michael Bay is launching the new C8.
It is coming.
Yeah.
And then there is talk about Mitsubishi bringing the Evo back for us.
Talk about rumors.
I would like that.
The Corvette goes
like
away
that.
and the Evo comes back. Very
yeah, Camaro,
interesting.
Yes.
Sorry, yes, Camaro, yes.
But
sorry.
All these fun cars, I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
I would love the Evo come back. The discussion there is because, you know, Renault now owns all, that it would be essentially using tech from the current Renault Megane. Now, we like the Renault Megane in all forms. The RS versions of that is a great front-wheel drive car. We really enjoy it. It'd be a great platform to work with. It'd obviously be tech sharing. You can see the breadcrumbs here that make this go, oh, I see how that could make sense. There's even discussion of it having a 48-volt. Now, we had that on the new Mercedes GLS we just drove.
There's going to be more of that.
Hybridization system. So that would allow for an extra hybrid boost before you get on actual boost. I mean, the recipe here sounds A, viable, and B, fantastic, but they've got to make it. It's got to become real. This is just as much a rumor as the Camaro's death. You can see the breadcrumbs that would lead to the Camaro dying too. They've done it before. You know, in the 90s, they killed it and brought it back in the 2000s, and that's why we still have a Transformer-looking car. So there's that.
I wonder if Michael's involved in the design.
They're
going to
kill
too.
It. They're going to find a new filmmaker, not Michael Bay, that's going to make a new whatever, and it's going to, I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
This is all very intriguing. I hope it all happens. It's
yeah,
not going
it'd be
to.
Great. It'd be great.
All right, we're jumping to the debate with Connor, who writes to us. He's 27. His other two cars, well, vehicles are totally paid off. First of all, a Honda Element, okay, and a Kawasaki KLR 650. Element is the utility vehicle. The KLR is the city commuter. But he has now convinced himself he needs a road trip car. So he writes to us saying, what is the great American road trip car? Even though later in the email, he's saying for weekend getaways and weekend road trips, I envisioned this grand, you know,
you thought he was driving
plan.
Cross-country.
You know, the Grand Canyon is a stop, and then you head north and through Vegas. And
you're going to see Mount Rushmore just because you can't believe somebody carved faces in a rock
exactly.
in the middle of South Dakota. Yeah, all of this.
There we
yes.
go. And then Pacific Northwest, and it's this giant loop, maybe. But I do get, you're just wanting the getaway, the weekend road trip warrior. Now, he loves Japanese reliability, but he's not married to it. Loves coupes, and he's got two dogs and a girlfriend, hello, who will be riding along. So a 2+2 coupe would be ideal. He's also 6'4", and he says, you know, the headroom would be good.
Okay.
So again, like I said at the top of the show, budget is 10 grand with a Paul limiter of $13,000. So I started, I went in this circuitous route, and then I did come across the car I think you should
get. Okay, good.
It's not exactly good on gas, really.
Okay.
But, you know, road trip cars don't necessarily have to do that. Commuter cars do. But
true.
Road trip cars do
true.
Not have
I agree
to
with that. I agree with that,
that,
yeah.
So I started in this very strange arena of the 1999 to 2003 Acura CL Type S, the coupe.
Interesting.
Now, this okay. is a second generation, and these are cars that run 200, 250,000 miles with very few issues. Yeah. Change the timing belt, change the oil, you should be good.
It's a Honda. It'll be okay.
Now, for 1 year, they were even available with manual transmissions.
Ooh, there you go.
And I found one, an 03 Type S with 113,000 miles for $7,000.
Hmm.
They're out there. They're low priced. And here's the deal. It's not a amazing sports car, track car, whatever. But think about road tripping, big, comfortable seats. It's got a lot of space.
Yep.
It's a coupe. It's got
yep.
space for the dogs in the back. Great air conditioner, great stereo. You're just going to cruise in mm-hmm. this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for $7,000, and there's a lot of them for less than that. We're talking $6,000, $5,000. Kind of interesting, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it's a big car, so it'll ride nice, big trunk. Think about this.
Nice place to be. I see where you are. I see where you are.
But I left that there. I left it behind.
Okay.
And I went looking at Maserati Gran Turismos. Inexplicably.
Of course you did, because that's exactly what Connor needs.
Well, the problem is, I looked at Park Place LTD, I found the Vandenpla, the 99 Vandenpla.
You just fall into that website regularly, yeah.
And I went, wait, if Jags are now this, what are Maseratis? What's the cheapest Maserati Gran Turismo coupe? They're still $35,000. You couldn't pay me $35,000 to go own that car.
And that would be one of the heroes of that trend on YouTube right now, where you buy the worst version
yeah.
of whatever and you try to make it run. That's a horror show. It really is.
But this, you know, Topaz with ivory interior, it's pristine.
No.
It's brand new.
No. Ivory is code for white. White interior is just
Connor,
the worst idea ever.
Vandenpla.
That's just terrible.
Just say the name. I did find an 07 XK8. So the coupe with 25,000 miles for $14,800. All these, you know.
You're not helping Connor at all.
Luxury
Connor's,
cars.
We're off of the weeds. Connor isn't getting any help from this at all.
Short story for you. We have a friend named Dixon who runs, helps run the track out here, the Utah Motorsports campus. And he, you know, the track's a bit of a ways out there. And he paid, what, $2,000 for his Cadillac?
It may have been $3,000 at most.
Okay.
He literally bought an old, early 2000s Cadillac from the classic cliche story. He literally bought it from a grandmother who drove it to church and the grocery store.
Yeah.
And he drove it, and it was his commute car for like a 60-mile commute, because he would just get in the fast lane. He was like, I never get pulled over. The cops don't even notice me.
Exactly.
People
exactly.
are flying by me getting pulled over. It doesn't even matter. He said, I'm comfortable. It's you know, completely isolated from the world. He can get off his work day and just relax.
Does it have a North Star in it?
I don't remember. I think it might have. I think it might have been that generation.
Might. But for $2,000 or $3,000?
Yeah.
Hello.
He had it for a few years, and it was just, he said it was his perfect boat.
So funny.
And also, it's that whole, the full non-precious thing that we talk about.
True,
he didn't care what happened to
blows
that
up,
car.
Blows up.
He was just like, because his commute was entirely freeway. He would just get on the freeway, and it's west of Salt Lake where there's no traffic anyway.
Yeah,
so he would just get on the freeway, put on the cruise control, and arrive at work.
The best.
Yeah.
The best. So it made me think of that. Now, I'm not saying go get a North Star Cadillac. But they are cheap.
But you could. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
What I arrived at, and the car I think you should get, is the fifth generation Pontiac GTO. It is the Holden Monaro.
I like it. Yeah, that's good. It's really good.
06, 85,000 miles for $9,000. The one I found you as actually a serviceman in the Navy is getting rid of it. There's a few things that don't work, but the point is all these GTOs are $7,000 to $10,000 for decent ones, even if it has high miles. It's a Chevy. It's going to run. Now, like I said before, not the greatest gas mileage ever. It'll do fine if you're just cruising.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've got a car you can do burnouts. You could autocross it. It's kind of fun. It's decently sporty. And even though most of them are automatics, you can find a manual. But, you know, hey, still get the automatic. They're going to run. I found a lot of high mileage ones.
Interesting.
They just run.
Yeah.
It's just going to go.
It's all Chevy parts in there,
yeah.
for sure. Yeah.
So GTO for your American road trip car, not
like
only
it.
Is the car Well, it's kind of American, even though it is a Holden, built in Australia. But you know what I mean?
Kind of American, yeah.
It's still, there's things, there's pieces yes. there, okay? Work
yes,
with
you're
me
right.
here. There's
pieces. I'm trying to be with you, yeah.
So yeah, that's what I think you should get.
That's good. I have three for you. We're talking 2+2s that are inexpensive, that are going to be decent to drive. What I find interesting here is we are trying to find the middle ground between a bike and the Honda
that's
Element.
That's true.
Yikes. Okay. So I instantly go to stuff that I think, okay, what can we really get? And then I realize, well, no, road trip.
Yeah.
Let's not lean too much toward the bike. We got to road trip this thing. We got to be in it for a while.
Think, you know, South Dakota. Think Texas.
So, yeah. Oh, man.
Cruise control, air conditioner, your favorite podcast.
There's not enough luxury to get you through West Texas. I've done it multiple times. Okay.
That Cadillac, the DeVille with the North Star
would
be
Fort
good.
Stockton to El Paso Ooh. Is just death. Ooh. It's just the number here, I will tell you, the number one thing you need is an air conditioner. And it needs to work really, really well.
Heck yeah.
Ideally cruise control and just cling to your sanity. Cling to it. It's you and the tumbleweeds. Anyway.
Wow.
The Infiniti G37.
Okay, good.
Great 2+2.
Good.
That engine's been around forever.
Are they 13 grand or less?
Oh, you can find them. Absolutely, you can.
That's good news.
Yeah, they've dropped. And so is the Genesis Coupe. Hyundai Genesis
true.
Coupe.
That's
another
true.
2+2. Good room, great road trip car. They run, they look great. I really like the Genesis Coupe. Both of those I like, but I think my favorite might be the last one of my three. I love your GTO, by the way.
Okay.
It was kind of on the fringe. I was kind of going, are you going to think of it? I'm glad you did.
Okay.
You know what you can actually get for this? I've got one in front of me right now. For $10,500, okay, a 2008 Audi A5.
Oh,
for $10,500, the mileage.
You're kidding
me. No, it's amazing. The mileage is I've got it right here, 78,000 miles.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Now you can find them. I mean, this same idea, this same vintage, well over 100,000 miles. But my point is, here's one that isn't at 100,000 miles. It's a California car, the A5. Is a fantastic road trip car.
Mm.
Now, the S, look, you could want more power and all that kind of thing, but I will say the first time I drove the A5, that whole platform, was at one of those old Motor Press Guild track days, probably around 2008. And I drove an A5, not an S5, and I remember thinking, this is the first Audi I've liked in base form.
Mm. Sure,
yes, the S5's sure. got more. Yes, it's got more bells and whistles. You can go RS5. Yes, it gets better and better and better. I get it.
Yeah.
But for what it is, it was surprisingly good on the track. They get good gas mileage. They're a nice place to be. They have timeless looks. You yeah, really, with your 13 yeah. grand, could go find yourself an Audi A5.
Huh.
So I think for road tripping, that's a pretty nice place to be.
Initially, they had the 3.2 V6, and then everything went to the 2.0, the turboed 4, but... Depending on the price, you could find either.
Yes. This one actually is the V6.
Is it? Yeah.
So
it's still a great engine.
Depends, yeah.
It still works great. So
I think that's a surprising one that is possible in your budget. The other two are more sports cars. The mm-hmm. Infiniti is more sports car even than the A5, and the Genesis definitely is as well. But you're in an Audi A5. If you're doing some like road, you're sawing through miles, it's a nice place to be.
Yeah. Connor Vanden Pla, candy apple,
no.
fish scale, metallic champagne,
no.
topaz.
It's
awesome.
That color's, every time you describe it, the color gets worse. Somehow
you
you're making
your
it worse.
Car? Like what?
Yeah, it's
what,
all
did
bad.
Did she hand it down
all
to
bad.
You? Like, I don't know. All right. Thank you very much for your debate. And we're going to take a quick break. We're coming back.
We've all got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. I've got an idea. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance to that list. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything.
All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, yes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance.
Having extra money in your pocket might be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Summer is finally here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. You know, the leather seats that you thought were a great idea until you scald your legs.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
We're often asked how we find the cars that we recommend to all of you listening. Whether it's local or nationwide, our searches start with Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car shopping site separately, you can enter all your parameters for the car you're looking for into AutoTempest one time, and then you can search for them all at once.
See results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more, or you can jump to AutoTrader or Car Gurus without entering anything new. Same parameters, new site. You can even search all of Craigslist. Think about how hard it is to search Craigslist nationwide, one at a time. AutoTempest.com has got you covered there all at once.
AutoTempest can help you find your next new or used car, whether there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the country. Plus, the people at AutoTempest listen to this podcast, and they're always refining the site for more features. They've got research tools, buyer and seller guides, and they're listening to what their users need.
So if you're doing your own drive homework, you're chasing your dream car, or just looking to feed the disease, as we are all the time, AutoTempest.com is your place to start. We're back with Nick, who wants a $10,000 convertible. But we're road tripping again, so that's the good link here.
Yeah. There's also Nick M., who has written to us as well. Nick, he's looking for a fun convertible in New England for his mom and dad. This is Nick C. in Indiana, who wants a $10,000 convertible. So Nick M., hopefully this helps as well.
Yeah, just clarifying. There are many Nicks out there.
Yes.
There's many of you in general. I want to make the public service announcement again. Thank you guys for all of the car debates that you send.
It's great.
There's tons of them. It is a near overwhelming amount. We've asked for it. We are thankful for it. It is fun at this point to just see kind of new and different conversations we can have. We love that you're sending them in. Also, thank you for rating and reviewing the podcast. That is huge. That helps the podcast stay in the top 10, which we greatly appreciate. It helps people find the podcast. I say it often because it's true. We get an email almost once a week, which is, I just found your podcast. And that's happening because you guys are rating and reviewing it, and that's keeping it high enough that when people go looking for a podcast about cars, they find this one. If you've just joined us, thank you. If you've been with us since the beginning, wow, that's a lot of listening. Thank you, and I hope both of you have rated. It'd be great.
You know, I will also say, if you have written to us and we're not able to get to your debate, and then you go buy a car, please let us know as well, because we can feature that. To feature your car on Here's What You Bought podcasts, it doesn't have to be necessarily we featured,
that's,
you know,
true,
and we made,
that's
suggestions.
Very true. Yeah.
Because you might have said, hey, something triggered me about, you know, what you guys said, and it made me think of that, and then I bought the car that I love.
Yeah.
And then what's so great about all these emails is that at some point, everyone is going to buy another car.
True.
Eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like a perpetual motion machine, which I love.
Until we're all told we can't drive cars anymore because they're evil, we will keep doing it. Yes.
All right. So Nick writes to us. He's been watching the YouTube channel and the podcast. Well, he's not watching the podcast, but he's listening to. So thank you so much, Nick. His wife, Dog, and he currently live in Indiana while she pursues a PhD. And he works as a mechanical engineer doing AR and VR. So that is definitely in my bag of tricks, my past there.
That's been
which
your
is
history for sure, yeah.
Pretty fun.
Recent history,
it's fun to see the proliferation, the continued proliferation of VR in the automotive industry. Very interesting to me.
Crazy.
So he works in that arena, and he currently has a 2012 Mark VI Volkswagen GTI, 115,000 miles, and that's the daily. Mm-hmm. He's got a 60-mile round trip to work. And then they've also got an 06 Hyundai Elantra with 175,000 miles.
Those are some high-mile cars.
Yeah, no kidding. His wife's car from her parents. Now, she walks to the local university and barely uses the car. And the Elantra is doing well, but the GTI has had a few reliability issues, which has left them stranded on their drive home. There's a fuel injector that's failed, other things that have gone on. And so since they do this drive a few times a year, they love to drive different vacation spots, so they're saying it's great to have the GTI, but yeah, not sure. Should it go?
Well, and the other sad part of this story is the fact that Nick had a BRZ that he loved, and he sold it to get the GTI to be a little more normal car for he and his wife and the dog, and to kind of be the grown-up car. And now he's going, should I have done that? Because this GTI, it's done everything very well when it hasn't given them problems. And it hasn't given them constant problems, but compared to the Elantra with more miles that just kind of refuses to die, the GTI is kind of raising its hand a few too many times for needs. So that is the question.
Needy.
So the hope is, okay, the GTI is paid off. They would theoretically sell that and wind up with roughly about a $10,000 budget.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot to work with. Can we get a more fun convertible? He's still missing that 86 platform in the BRZ. What could we do here?
Yeah, his wife's requirement is that the next car, this fun car, be a convertible. He wants the rear-wheel drive, wants the manual. Budget is 10 grand since the GTI is paid off. And what he says next is that they both like the styling of the 3 Series, the E46 generation 3 mm-hmm. Series BMW mm-hmm. and prior. Now, he says one of his dreams has always been the E46 M3, but he's a little bit leery of the maintenance. But on the other hand, why not? Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, you could take that risk. The convertible M3s are much cheaper than the coupe M3s. They're also not nearly as stiff, which is why they're much cheaper.
That's true.
You do still have some of the same subframe issues and some of the same maintenance issues, but those are down far enough that your budget of 10 grand, you could probably at least look around and maybe find one. I'm just kind of worried about the $10,000 M3. I think that's... there's maintenance coming. You're worried about the GTI maintenance. There's maintenance coming on that car.
Just going to happen. Now, they like the Miata and the Boxster, but realize that they want 4 seats to be able to not only bring the pup, which is a 30-pound Brittany Spaniel, but since this is the weekend getaway car, they might want to be able to bring people too. So errands, getaways, dogs, stuff. Okay, I can see that. So it's not just... you know, Miata's the answer here. It's not necessarily.
Well, he also says that he's tall enough that he feels like the Miata and the Boxster are a little tight for him. So there's mm-hmm. that concern as well. I do like here that the main requirement for more than 2 seats is actually the dog. I mean, maybe they take people, but it's really a 30-pound dog.
Dog's a family member.
Of course it is. I kind of feel like that we can work with that. We can work with the fact, because it's not like you said 100-pound dog. This isn't a person-sized animal, so that makes it a little more viable.
True. All right, so Nick, I jumped in here starting out with, I hear your requirements. I know you want rear-wheel drive. However, these cars are now just flat-out cheap.
Okay.
That is the 2013 Abarth 500 convertible.
Okay.
Now, it'll fit you well because you said you've got the longer torso. You're 6'1", longer torso, so he needs the headroom. Mm-hmm, and keep mm-hmm. in mind, that Fiat 500, the general design, the H-point is higher.
Yes, and it's
and
got
it's
a lot
got
of headroom.
The headroom.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it'll fit you well. It's not rear-wheel drive. But what's cool about this is it's got this snorty engine. They're mm-hmm. inexpensive. Mm-hmm. I think they're just going to run. And the convertible actually has a 2 position. So you can put it back kind of like a giant sunroof, or then you can go all the way back, all the way down to the tail there. So it's kind of a 2 position, and you still get the structural rigidity of cars that, you know, are not convertibles because the A-pillar just sweeps up over the top and it just follows the roof line. And so that structural part is still there. So it's not readily apparent, actually, that it's convertible. It's kind of like just a sliding giant top, really, not necessarily a full folding top. So it's kind of an interesting choice here. It's, like I said, not rear-wheel drive, but it is tiny. It's got a tiny back seat, but the pup's only 30 pounds. So
agreed.
Could work.
Well, 30 pounds is almost, it could almost hang out in the lap. Almost.
Almost.
Depends.
Yeah,
depends on how tolerant you are and how calm the dog is. If your dog's, I have 2 dogs now. One of them, my son's dog, the really young one, gets in a car and just goes, oh, we're doing this now? Oh, okay. And then lays down and is quiet.
Oh, really?
Sits there. Lays there until you get to the destination. My other dog, who's 13, her entire life, she whines, yelps, speaks the entire drive until the drive is
warbles.
Over. And that's a great word for it. And if, because of scent memory, if you start to drive somewhere she knows and likes, it gets worse.
Oh, yeah.
So to have a dog now that just gets in the car and is like, all right, and is quiet, I'm like, is he okay? So who knows what kind of dog you have, but yeah.
All right, so this E46 thing intrigued me, and I hear you about the M3, but I do want you to know that the 06 325 CI, it's the same thing, it's just not the high-strung M3.
Yes, yes.
68,000 miles for $8,400.
Those are cheap. They're really cheap.
There's
if you don't go
them.
M3, you've got tons of options for that body style.
I even found an 05 330 CI... with 47,000 miles, it's a manual for $12,900. Now, I know that's a little bit over your budget, but it has the ZHP package.
Oh, wow.
That's the $3,900 upgrade.
Yeah. That's excellent.
It's got the Motorsports body kit, Xenon headlights, shadow line trim. It's like the almost M3.
I like
but
it.
But it's not quite the, high-strung, Motorsports engine.
Theoretically, it may be cheaper to run. I think your point.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
It's a SoCal car, 47,000 miles.
That's great.
On an
05. That's really good. That's excellent. Excellent. Yeah.
And it's manual rear-wheel drive for passengers.
Okay.
It is silver with the silver interior and everything's silver and gray.
If you need it,
but
it'll
still,
be silver. Yeah.
I'm just saying they're out there, mm-hmm. and you could go mm-hmm. pursue. It's not quite the M3, but here's a 330 Ci. That's still got a lot of power.
Yeah.
Think that could be interesting for you.
I like it.
And
I
it's
like
four it. Place, four passenger here.
Okay, cool. I like that. I actually had wondered about that generation of convertible BMW as well, so I'm glad you kind of unpacked it.
They're good looking, actually.
They are good looking. And they look, honestly, they look pretty close to the M3 anyway in convertible form. And so
true.
I think they're just good in general. I do like that.
That's true.
I'm glad you brought it up. You could maybe find the E93, the next gen.
Mm.
Now, you said you're not as big a fan of that, but look into
that. I mean,
they
go to hardtop at that
point. It's a hardtop convertible. That's why I bring it up, because
hardtop
convertible, you might find more usable overall. So I'm just mentioning that. Just look at it. I have to go to two what I feel like are obvious choices, because they've been around long enough you can get them in your budget, Camaro and Mustang.
They are. You could absolutely do that.
You can get one that's not the hottest version out there and it's convertible. And convertibles just don't hang on to their price as much. So you could get one of those. One of the reasons that the Camaro doesn't get recommended as much on this show is because it has bad visibility. When you take the top down, the visibility is great. All your visibility issues go away because you have no top at all. I'm just saying.
You
do have that issue.
Over your shoulder.
And I typically like the chassis of the Camaro more than the Mustang as far as just a driver's car. So I think Camaro and Mustang are both viable options. You should drive those and see. But then I'm going to go a little wild card here because I think it might be the place to be.
Okay, good.
It's not going to seem obvious, but with your budget of 10 grand, you can go shop the 4th and 5th gen Corvette. Don't get a convertible. Get the target top.
I like that a lot better.
So you get the target top. It's the single panel that lifts out. Get the target top. These have a surprising amount of back hatch space, much more than you think they do.
Yeah, that's very
true.
So
the two of you going on a long road trip or a weekend fun trip, yes, just go do that.
Huh.
So there's that option. Now, what happens with the dog? The dog is now in the footwell or sitting on your wife's lap or whatever. I agree. There's not really a great backseat for the dog. There isn't. There's no backseat at all.
Sure,
but
sure.
But I think you'd be surprised by how much of a great road trip and fun car you get by a C4 or C5 Corvette with the Targa. I think it does all the convertible stuff. It does all the sports car stuff, and it's in your budget.
I like that. And you've got a full-fledged Corvette. That is a full-fledged sports car.
For sure. For sure.
Huh. Love it. Love it. All right. Well, Nick, hope that helps. Nick M. in New Hampshire, hope that is interesting because there's some ideas for your folks there as well. Hopefully, you know, two birds with one stone a little bit. Hopefully, like I said, that gives you some ideas. We've got to jump to questions because there are so many. And again, I'll add my thanks for your great social media questions.
Yeah, you guys are awesome with those.
I know I'm asking twice a week. I'm putting it out there constantly, but you're coming back with more questions. Mm-hmm. If we haven't got to it, please keep asking.
Yeah.
We do like to see just, you know, a full queue of fun, interesting questions, not silly, you know, kind of over the top, but
we're
silly anyway.
Those happen anyway.
So,
yeah.
All right. So jumping in here, Justin Brewer writes to us on Facebook. Can we give a shout out to the Nissan IDX Nismo? Said Nissan showed it off a few years ago as a concept car. Yes, they did. It's on their official Nissan USA website. It's under the concept future tab with a lot more cool cars that we wish Nissan would build because the rest of their lineup, Not compelling right now. I'm ready for Nissan to bring
for something.
Drop something on us. It doesn't have to be at a car show, Nissan. Just make some sort of huge, amazing. We've got the next. It's the 400Z or it's the whatever.
Yes.
Anything. Mm-hmm. Bring the next electrified whatever. It's been way too long for their entire model lineup.
Yeah.
Nothing in
there.
Well,
their entire
compelling.
Enthusiast model lineup. Well, everything else is getting revised.
Still,
Have you seen the version of the Rogue we're on? Because of the Rogue.
Are we over the Star Wars
anyway,
version of the Rogue yet?
For the moment, but let's wait until the next Star Wars movie, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so yes, this does need to be Nissan's next car. I do agree because it's sort of like Nissan builds a BMW 2 Series.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it does evoke a lot of the Datsun lines and the Datsun
big time,
Bluebird
big
kind of, you know, lines. By the way, Justin, that particular car sits in the lobby of their design studio in San Diego. At least it used to when I was there a few times. And because it's a concept car, you use all kinds of different parts to make something look like its future.
Yeah,
so the exterior, the round rearview mirrors are actually 4.5-inch speakers or 3.5-inch round speakers, like door speakers.
Oh, interesting.
And then they've got a cool, you know, perforated metal over the top of it. So it looks like this cool rear view. Oh, it's just a speaker.
Huh.
Weird. But
interesting.
It's a concept car.
Yeah, of course.
They could have their own spec series. They could bring back.
There you go.
You know, Nissan drifting. That would be kind of the.
Yeah.
Gosh.
The platform for that.
240SX
sure.
kind of feel. Bring that back. It could be a race series. it's an enthusiast car. You could have a version that is a hybrid. It could be fully electric and just a fun sports car. That is the car. Justin, I agree. Nissan, are you listening?
Probably not. Probably but I like not. It anyway. It's very good. Here's an interesting one. Devin the Awesome on Instagram says, can you validate my want to sell my perfectly practical 2-year-old truck for a 14-year-old Corvette C6 to, quote, save money? Let's unpack this a couple ways.
Please justify this for me.
First off.
Do this.
Perfectly practical truck? I don't think, unless you are in construction and you are filling that bed all of the time, I do not put an equal sign between truck and practical. They don't ride as well as many other things because the shocks in the back are set up for you to carry a big load. Okay. They don't ride as well. They typically don't get as good a gas mileage. They're bigger, they consume, and they aren't as fun to drive. Now, please don't get me wrong. They have a specific usability. Mm-hmm. But unless you are using it for that all the time, I do not think a pickup is practical. So there's that. So I don't, and to go another way, if you said you were driving a mundane normal sedan, if you said you were driving a very middle of the road small 5-seat CUV, I could see you go, yeah, I'm on a practical thing and I want to go to a sports car. I think your pickup is as far one direction from practical as the Corvette is the other.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you're just picking the other bookend. Yeah. And if you can actually get in a C6 Corvette for less money than your pickup and it will do everything you need it to do, I think you actually have made the more practical choice. I bet you it'll be more fun to drive. It'll probably burn less gas, and it'll probably carry everything you need it to carry. So I'm kind of done.
I love it. All right. Question from Seth Lowry here. He's beseeching us. He owns a 2014 BRZ. He's had it since new. It's paid off, and he's getting the itch for something different. Now, he loves JDM cars and found a 1995 Mitsubishi GTO.
Oh,
so
that's right.
In Japan, it was the GTO. In America, it was the 3000 GT. And then you could get the VR4 platform with the four-wheel steering, the all-wheel drive, and the gurney flap that flaps and all the stuff. Now, to be able to afford to do so, he would have to sell the BRZ. Should he follow his heart? His head says, just keep the BRZ, turbo it, enjoy what he's got. Or should he go from that, a modern, reliable car, to a 25-year-old Mitsubishi? Your heart wants what your heart wants, right? Have you driven one of these cars is my first question. If you have, and you still know that you want it, is the only reason you're going after the JDM because it's right-hand drive and you want to import it? Because otherwise, the 3000 GT VR4 still exists.
Agreed.
Just go buy one of those.
Agreed, yeah.
You know, and then promptly pour money into the lifters that you have to redo and the
everything that
the
breaks.
Hydraulics that actually they might leak, so the four-wheel steering doesn't work, and then you have to redo the electrical actuator that puts the flap up in the back at speed, and you have to chase the little things around the car. But otherwise, that was like Mitsubishi's heyday. They had the Gallant VR4, the 3000 GT, then they came out, they were still proliferating the Evo. Hello, Mitsubishi. What happened?
Well, but it's such a tech-heavy car that
it's a heavy car, too.
Well, it is that. You're right. It's such a tech-heavy car that the problem is you're talking about lots of tech that can break from a quarter century ago. Let's be honest, okay?
That is Olympic-type sprinting away from that car.
Wow, world record. Anyway.
Wow.
The thinking here is, how much do you want a project? Do you want something that isn't reliable? I'm not saying it might not be reliable, but I think this is a headspace. This is our Phaeton and Jaguar discussion. Are you willing to go into something expecting there'll be stuff to do? Because if this just needs to be your car, that's my concern. If this can be the car that is, can you believe I have this? It doesn't run this week, but that's okay. Then maybe. If this is your car, I'm concerned for you. And I come back to where you were, Paul, which is why not just get the U.S. version?
Unless you just want the right-hand drive because of the uniqueness and weirdness.
But I think the right-hand drive is another one of those things where it's very cool, but probably not for your daily.
I need you to have driven one of these, Seth, before you make the decision to pull the trigger. You need to have, driven a right-hand car and lived with it in the U.S. for a while, if that's where you are, if you're in the U.S., or the configuration where you're driving opposite of what traffic is doing, is my point. And may I make a suggestion? What about the first generation Acura NSX? If we're going
If you're going to go classic 90s JDM, you're right. That's interesting.
I know they're probably more expensive than the Mitsubishi, but hang on to that BRZ unless you know, like I said, unless you know that's what you want, it is unique. I agree. But NSXs, they're cool. They're great. They run Honda.
I hear you. Okay. I like that. That's really good. There are so many good ones here.
Yeah, there are.
Here's Track Daily Crush. You see the track, Chad Merrick? Okay. It's a track edition.
Oh.
Track Daily Crush, Laguna Seca, The Ring, and Spa. I have an answer.
I do as well, yeah.
Track Daily Crush. I'm crushing Laguna Seca.
Okay, good.
I love that track. It's very cool. But you know the reason it gets crushed is because it's the shortest of the group.
Oh, good reason. Okay.
It's the shortest of the group.
Good reason.
And the sound restrictions means you have weird, you know, spaghetti tailpipes. There's that as well. The daily is The Ring, because The Ring is one of those things that is practically a canyon road. I want to daily that all the time.
Totally.
And treat Spa like a track.
I'm 100% with you.
Good.
That's amazing. Awesome. Interesting story that we were just told by a friend of ours who invited us out to the Thunderhill track, and we drove Spec Racer Fords just last week. So he was telling me about somebody. I cannot corroborate this, but it's a great story. Because of the noise restriction for his race car, he came up with, I think it was a Raspberry Pi or just some circuitry that was GPS enabled, connected to a solenoid in the exhaust.
I heard about this, yeah.
And where it would know where the car is on track because of GPS, and it would shut the exhaust off. And it would drive by the sound meter, and then at the top of the hill, it opens back up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to do a thing. He just knows it's going to happen.
Muffles the exhaust automatically.
It's all based on GPS, where the car is on track. And he rigged it up, just his own car. And I think, man, if you sold that device.
That's fantastic.
Because that can work for other tracks, too. Thunderhill
actually
has noise restrictions. I can't imagine why, because it's,
yeah,
you know, there's
the
nothing out there.
You pretty much could just send up a weather balloon and never see anything.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
There's other tracks on the planet that have these noise restrictions. He could sell that as a
funny. I like that.
Thing. He could
That's
make
really
money.
Good.
Great idea.
Scott Berger says, is it worth owning a car if you're too precious with it and to take it to 98% of places 98% of the time? Scott, I feel like you're answering your own question. If you have a car and you are kind of thinking of all... We were talking about this last podcast. All the reasons to not drive it instead of reasons to drive it. I do think it's too precious. Does it mean you should get rid of it? That's much more of a personal thing. But I come back to the thing we always say, which is cars should be driven.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just having that thing and you're treating... This is going to sound weird. You're treating it more like art than something that moves... I think that's not the reason it exists. The great thing about cars is they are art that moves.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of precious, Zachary Levine asks, worst food to eat in the car? Food. That's the worst food.
That's the Paul answer. That is the Paul answer
no.
right there. Just food, yeah.
Now, I caveat, on road trips, absolutely. In other people's cars, sure. I'm stuffing my face with Cheetos and spaghetti and Oreos and... chocolate cake.
We've talked about this. It's things like Cheetos and Kit Kats, things that crumble or
crumbly,
leave a film.
And
that's all bad.
You know, you're looking around and nobody asks for a napkin. You just wipe it on the convenient surface.
Certainly if you have something like Cheetos, it's just like, what do I do with this?
That's just for the Cayman, but for the Expedition, I admit. But the problem is, it's always me that does the vacuum. I'm always the idiot cleaning everything
like
up.
It. Yeah.
That's why I don't like it. All right. So, Ed the Sled asked if I would make any aftermarket modifications to the Cayman or would I always keep it stock. It might be a different set of wheels for track use. And ultimately, it'd probably be a Cobb tune, to be honest, and pull more out of that engine because I know it can.
Yeah.
The exhaust, I wouldn't touch. It's brilliant.
It is gorgeous.
I would not touch it. But
yeah,
otherwise, you know, putting money towards other things right now. So, you know.
Two questions from Nathan Garfield on Facebook. He said, what's the Lexified BRZ?
Mm.
Which I think could be a few things. But the question that I'm really intrigued by is, what do we mean when we say a car looks like a shooting brake?
By the way,
that's brake as in B-R-A-K-E.
Yes, yes.
Shooting brake is designed from something literally where, or is it? It's shooting brake, B-R-A-K-E.
B-R-A-K-E,
it?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Because it's related to the original idea of it was we were out shooting.
Yeah.
And we're taking a break, even though it's spelled that way. And now it's a whole other thing.
You're literally laying your long rifles in the back.
Anyway, the best example currently that I can think of is the Ferrari FF, now called the GTC Lusso for reasons I don't understand. It's the same car. That is a 4-seat car with a hatchback and 2 doors. That is the best modern example I can think of.
That's great, actually.
Now, that design is essentially a very squared off back hatch to a car that could be a coupe shape. Imagine taking, I'll invent one in your head real quick. Think of a BRZ. Take that straight line from the windshield until the back bumper and now make a hatch. Chop it off into a box. Mm-hmm. That would make that car into a shooting brake.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the shape. Now, having said that, there are a lot of cars that are now four doors that are taking that shape. The current GT version, GT Turismo version of the Panamera now looks like a shooting brake, where it actually has the back hatch. So when they get those long roof with the chopped hatch, that's much more of a shooting brake look, even though if it has four doors, it's supposed to technically not be a shooting brake.
Hmm. There's a question over here from Tristan Kramer asking, if we were approached to create new slogans for car companies, what would we come up with? Hmm. Silly and serious answers are all acceptable. Well, you've heard our Lincoln, you know, still nothing to see
Lincoln,
here slogan.
Nothing to see here.
How about two others? Range Rover. Got money to waste? And then I worked hard on Maserati. I have a lot of Maserati here.
I just think Pickle Fork solves it.
Well, that could work. That could work. So Maserati is the, you know, keep trying. One day you'll get that promotion. Or, you know, for when you didn't get the promotion, but you want your neighbors to think you did, Maserati might be for you.
You don't mind being broke and broken.
The bad news is you didn't get the promotion, but the good news is you still have options somewhere in there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm working on my Maserati, but I want it to be just snarky enough so it doesn't quite offend Maserati owners, but it's just a subtle, like, jab. Just a little.
I almost feel like this would be a topic Tuesday. We could just sit down with all the car makers and just come up with stuff. That could be frightening.
Because, you know, there's, you know, for every car manufacturer, and I point the finger at me too for, you know, I've made the Porsche joke and then Ford and, you know, if the Ford is the tow truck, how will it tow itself? Like, how does it fix itself?
There's so many of those terrible jokes. Yeah, that goes on and on. Yeah. It's more about taking the joke and figuring out the tagline that you could see on a poster. And that's the thing about it. It could be really fun for this.
And it needs to actually look like a marketing ad. Not a meme, but more of a marketing full, like, one-page spread in a magazine, that kind of thing.
Something you'd see on a poster on a wall. Yeah. That'd be great. That'd be a very funny topic Tuesday. Jackalope Man said, if for the next year you had to drive a car from the 80s, what car would you pick and why?
Oh.
I have my answer.
Okay.
The first-gen E30 M3.
That's great. Yeah.
87. This is not a fast car. Now, I like, as you think about the things I've owned, I like the slow car fast idea. That is a car that's not fast. Yeah. That is a momentum car. The chassis is brilliant. The gearbox is great. Heel toe is perfect.
Mm.
It appreciates good momentum. It has a slow steering rack, but it's just incredibly fun to throw around.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, it's actually surprisingly usable. Space-wise,
It's
the trunk, it's because car, of the crash restrictions at the time, the trunk is cavernous.
Yeah, true.
And it's not a big car.
True.
That's my answer.
Mm. I might go 928 again. I don't know. It seems like a foregone conclusion.
I can see it, yeah.
I mean, it's something Porsche. All of 80s Porsches, I bring them. From an 82 SC to the 3.2 Carrera, can bring it.
There was a 928. What year was that one? When we were in LA.
Oh, 85. I might post that again here. And
there was a 928 GTS, pretty much the spec. It was Paul spec. It was the spec.
Oh,
that
the
Paul
black
wanted.
One you're talking. Oh, yeah, the black one. It was a 95.
And
yeah.
we found that car in LA the last time we were there. And I was concerned we were going to be late for our next appointment because Paul was like doing circles around the car.
Like going back through my bank balances. Now, if I move that there and I cash that out, how would that work? It was bad. All right. So a question from Justin Brewer here on Twitter asking, well, he says he doesn't think automotive journalists do the Supra any favors in videos when comparing them to Cayman videos. Most Cayman vids feature a lunatic hysterically laughing from excitement, whereas all Supra videos have someone calmly stating this is a really good car. Well, it wasn't us that came up with the Cayman angle. Supra and Toyota have explicitly stated the Supra went after the Cayman. It shares the exact wheelbase as the Cayman and the Boxster. That was their idea. Just as the Tesla Model X, when it came out, Elon was comparing it to minivans. That wasn't us.
Yeah, true.
He brought I think it was an X7 and a Honda Odyssey out on stage to compare them to a leading SUV and a leading minivan, and it parked right in between and lifted the doors and, you know, thankfully it cleared the, didn't scratch anything, but
you
know what I mean?
As well, yeah.
That was their idea. So most of the time it's the car manufacturers know they're benchmarking other cars. Yeah. They're looking, they know. And that was the point of Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota definitely made that benchmark. If you're referring to the demeanor of the automotive journalist, let me go another route. And I have a bit of a bone to pick or a rant here, but I'm going to be very short about it.
Okay.
In general, automotive journalists, side note, Porsche makes excellent cars. They're excellent to drive. In general, and I'm painting with a broad brush, there are a lot of automotive journalists that give Porsche a free pass. All their cars are brilliant.
That's fair, actually.
Oh my gosh, I'm driving a Porsche.
That's fair.
Let me tell you why it's awesome. So that's the headspace of many automotive journalists when they drive anything on a Porsche product. Now take that to the Cayman, which, candidly, is brilliant, but you're bringing that, oh, it's a Porsche.
True.
Secondarily, the Supra, while benchmarked at the Cayman, has a secondary problem. The journalists are coming in naturally skeptical because the last Supra is this icon, and we've all heard all the reasons why it's supposed to suck. So they're instantly coming in and sitting down in that car with a different headspace that is, am I going to like this? Whereas in the Porsche, it's like, it's a Porsche. It's bound to be great. Let's see if it is.
It's going to be the most
amazing
thing
leads
ever.
To two very different video conclusions in many cases.
It's also, I think, possibly the engine configuration. I mean, the Porsches are rear and mid-engine.
Yeah, but I think it's
now.
I think it's the predisposed headspace. I really
do. It's mostly that. I agree to that. I mean, it's hard to compare the exact, you know, you've got the wheelbase, the dimensions. But you're talking a front-engine rear-wheel drive car versus
true.
A mid or a rear. The dynamics are totally different.
But we're all coming, us included, everybody that is an automotive journalist that has driven the Supra so far was coming from a skeptical place of, is this going to be any good?
Mm-hmm.
So you're already coming in there, and that changes your whole headspace.
Yeah, for sure. All right, what else do you find here?
Thinking of replacing, this is Diema. He's thinking of replacing my ISF with an SS. They weigh about the same, which is interesting to think about. The Lexus ISF and the SS weighing the same. Weigh about the same, but the SS is much bigger. Will I be disappointed with the driving feel of the SS? Of course, the SS will be manual with magnetic ride. I think no. I think you're going to be quite impressed with that SS. It's a very different feeling car. I really like the engine in the ISF a lot. I think it is a better engine than the rest of the car. But did the ISF, and I'm really admitting my own, I haven't looked it up. Did the ISF even come manual? I feel like it was auto only, but
I
could be very wrong. But if you're doing magnetic ride and manual, whether the ISF was manual or not, that ride is going to shock you.
Yeah.
And the SS is very capable. I think you would thoroughly enjoy it. Plus, I suspect your ISF is significantly older than whatever SS you're going to get into. You're getting into a newer car.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'll wrap with this question from Travis White here. Several podcasts ago, he says, we talked about what makes sports cars. We might have to come back to that. But Travis is asking about what are the elements that make up a luxury or a premium or exotic car.
There's a topic Tuesday, practically.
That could be. Actually, we might save it. But very quickly.
Go for it. Please.
Wheels, first of all. On a luxury car, you see many spokes. Whereas a sports car, a stripped-down sports car, might have four or five spokes. Okay, so there's more air. There's just less there. Now, this is a generalization, but on, you know, a 7 Series, a Mercedes, or a Rolls-Royce, or whatever that is, you see a lot of intricate detail on the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And you also see, for example, the roofline. They're stretched out. The curves are very flattened out.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, a long, flat roofline and a long, flat rocker. Whereas a sports car, or an exotic car, that rocker can be anything. And then, of course, you get into materials and construction and those kinds of things. But we should actually break that down sometime in the future.
Wow.
Been great, giving a lot of great Topic Tuesdays as well. So please write the same place you're writing your emails, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or on the website. The Utah adventure is coming. For those of you who can't make it to the pilgrimage trip, we are sorry, but we'd love to see you at the Utah meetup. That is coming the first weekend of August 2019. Would love to see you there.
Yes, we'd love to have you there. I should say, happy Friday. And keep in mind, this is the closing day of registration for pilgrimage. If you have been holding out, you need to get in now.
Last call.
It really is last call. We're very excited about the group that's going. And then we will transition to talking entirely about the Utah meetup because we're just excited about it. It's funny, just because we have to do so much lead time on pilgrimage, it takes precedent for a while, even though the Utah meetup is going to come up first.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very fun.
Exactly. Guys, thank you again. Really looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.